food lovers around the world. Elisa welcomes you to the Food Files. In this program, we'll uncover tales and stories from the world of Italian food with students and staff of the Umbra Institute, a study abroad program in the beautiful town of Perugia. Each month, we'll walk together through Perugia's ancient alleys and picturesque countryside. This is our second episode, and we'll take you to a local farmer's market in the center of Perugia. As we walked through the stalls and talked to local Umbrian producers, Grace and Michael asked a few questions. What is the value of markets both for farmers and for consumers? Are markets still important social institutions? After a few hours of shopping at the market, we were hungry, and we had a meal at Mangiar Bene, a restaurant in the center of Perugia that only buys ingredients from small local producers. Anel and Meredith reviewed the restaurant for us and interviewed Davide, the chef. Stay with us until the third section of our podcast, because you'll learn everything there is to know about a local specialty, the Easter cheese bread, or torta di Pasqua, that Sophie and Lindsay have researched and baked for us. And talking about a special bread, Marco Bagli and Kat Tartaglia will spice up our English by talking about the word bread and its metaphors. Stay with us and discover what food in Perugia really means.
Ciao friends, it's Grace here. So today we're discussing farmers markets. And before we get started, I want to see if we're all on the same page. The farmers market atmosphere can often seem intimidating. You've got old ladies bargaining for tomatoes, cool bearded men and girls with long braids, funky jewelry. There's commotion and chaos, and if you're anything like me, you're looking around thinking, I am not cool enough or wise enough to be in a place like this. Maybe I should just stick to that quiet, unassuming city supermarket where my coolness definitely outweighs that middle-aged father buying cereal on aisle 12. Or at least it should. But before we get into our cars and drive and drive and find ourselves in the harsh lighting of the supermarket with random 80s music playing in the background as we stand in the frozen food section, maybe we should stop. Stop and think. What are we missing when we choose to abandon the farmer's market? If we look closer, we might find some pretty profound connections between these outdoor markets and the ways of the past. Isn't this how our grandmother shopped? Isn't this how our great-grandmother shopped? History tells us these food markets served a significant purpose since, well, Roman times, and even before. For centuries, if one couldn't grow it, he relied on the city market, often located in the forums or the city center. These markets served as a place for both the trade of food, but also ideas, beliefs, culture. They were like a social activity. So, what about today? No, we don't need farmers markets, in the sense that we could survive well without them. But maybe that makes life less exciting. Pinpointing the value of farmers markets can be a difficult task if we don't look deeper than the intimidating chaos and the confusion that might initially strike us. For those who frequent these local markets, both producer and consumer, their importance is dramatically evident. Rachel Brooke, a food anthropologist, explains that the square and the street are urban spaces that can have many functions. They are spaces waiting for city dwellers to give them meaning through everyday uses and acts of sociability. A market can be the showcase of a neighborhood and even an attraction that draws people from outside the area. It is undeniable that markets promote social interaction and animate neighborhoods. I think that's interesting. The promotion of social interaction, community contribution. Sure, at a big supermarket, you won't have to nudge through the bargaining grandmothers or the long-haired hippies, but you also won't learn from the talkative cheesemakers or the sweet old man selling honey who will remember your face with each weekly visit. And unlike a visit to the supermarket, your shopping experience will be lively and unpredictable even. I think we could all use a bit of that in our lives. And what is special about these markets, aside from the variety of delicious foods and the vibrant atmosphere, is the exchange between producer and consumer. There are opportunities to learn from an artisan who explains his life work and passion with pride, or a farmer who knows his produce and how to best cook it up. This gives people a chance to share both what they've created and even who they are. And it gives us a chance, as consumers, to ask questions and learn, to exchange and dialogue and possibly make friendships. Because of the farmers market, the farmers can avoid any middle buyers, which helps tremendously with production costs. And we avoid the harsh lighting and mile-long aisles of food preservatives. And there's even a possibility that we will one day be just like those bargaining old grandmothers in search of the perfect tomato, with wisdom, not learned from a textbook, but gained through the interactions in the market. So have I convinced you yet? Maybe Michael can, as he fills you in on Perugia's weekly market and shares some about what you'll find and who you'll find there.
Ieri che è successo in da marchetta, che guai ha combinato una concetta, niezza marchetta, niezza marchetta, che l'ha induppata in faccia una carretta, e la posa è scassata tutta cascetta, niezza marchetta, niezza marchetta. Tutta spesa l'è caruta, e una mossa l'è venuta, ha perduto e pumarola, e patane che scarola, un'insalata era fanella, con un bello cucuzziello, ha perduto proprio tutto, una ruzzina e franca frutta, ha perduto una rapesta, che teneva sotto la veste, cinque piezze molignane, con una forma parmigiana, sei castagne e pinte noce, e un pacco e roba roce, e s'interra che brioche, e ognuna vista... Tutta marchetta, tutta marchetta. O quando folla stevi in da marchetta, come gagneva la ronna concetta, rinda marchetta, rinda marchetta. Parraggio sei scassata camicetta, e la posa inguaglia tutta burzetta, miezza marchetta, miezza marchetta. Quanta strilla che faceva, tutta gente carreva, l'hanno rotta in un fagotto, tutte cose asciute sotto, nu capretta e nu mallone, e nu piezze provolone, cinque fiasche d'olio fine, o sapone che stupina, sette ponte in sogno lard, nu a sette camustard, 8 chili maccarune, e nu sacco che gravuna, puparola oliva, e nu capitone viva, po' carciofola pasiella, 4 capi e curiella, per non perdere roce trula, l'hanno vista pure tutta marchetta, tutta marchetta. E asciuto pazzo qua sonna concetta, e ha fatto arrivare tutta marchetta, buona cascetta, buona cascetta, che l'ha cacciata tante una furchetta, e ha secutato a chi l'era carretta, niezza marchetta, niezza marchetta. Na tu pacca che teneva tutta in terra la careva, ferrettina e frubicella, catenaccia e chiavatella, mazza, fila e saponetta, maceniella e macchinetta, naradiglia e natiella, scola pasta e caccavella, 8 piatte e 6 bicchiere, 48 cannoliere, proprio tutta roba e casa, o mastrilla e aratta a casa, un martiello, una martola, 25 sputarola, una lavagna e un sigione, un cuscino, un cazzone, un luzzulo e un masale, un cuppino e un urinale, un lettino e creatura, una pupata e segatura, un galluccio fatte greta, una gallina fatte seta, l'indiano fatte gess, e sigari e manaes, disegnato in faccio sole, e con tutto mazzafore, e sentere più arraggiato, e calessa scomigliata, tutto quanto attorno a essa, l'hanno vista pure.
Actually, right here in Perugia, capital city of Umbria, Perugians are fortunate enough to have their own market. Mercato del Soprammuro is situated right in the heart of Perugia, just steps away from the main piazza and all the main thoroughfare of the city. Every Wednesday morning, you can feel the electricity and vibrant atmosphere emanating from the market, from those vendors and all those walking around. Each vendor brings their own personality to the market. In fact, most cities have a central market that they base their identity around, but Perugia, unfortunately, does not have this daily market. although that is where Mercato del Sapremuro comes into play. This market is where once a week Perusians shop and in turn cast a vote for a central market to build their identity around. You can find the staples of any market here at Mercato del Sapremuro, such as basic fruit and vegetable vendors, but you can also find more boutique offerings such as truffle, chocolate, honey, and even wine vendors, just to name a few. Now, let's listen to a few of these vendors explain why this market is so important to them.
Noi siamo un caseificio della zona di Perugia e alleviamo le pecore e produciamo formaggi solo ed esclusivamente con il nostro latte. L'importanza di questo è data dal fatto che noi produciamo prodotti a chilometro zero che vanno direttamente dal produttore al consumatore e facendo questo abbiamo dei prodotti freschissimi. Permettono alle piccole imprese di vendere i propri prodotti nella zona in cui vengono prodotti. Facendo questo permette anche ai piccoli produttori di vendere non fornendo grandi quantitativi a grandi catene.
This was Francesco of Agrisolana Farm of Peter Virdis in Colle Umberto near Perugia. He says, "We are cheesemakers. We have sheep and we produce cheese using exclusively our milk. Our products are really fresh. We are a short supply chain and consumers can enjoy our cheese directly from the producers. Markets allow small producers like us to exist. We produce small quantities and we don't supply large supermarkets."
La nostra azienda esiste da più di 30 anni, produciamo sia miele biologico di diversi tipi, acacia castagno, otiglio, melata, mille fiori, e anche moltissime specialità di mieli con delle aggiunte, specialità a base di miele, mieli con oli essenziali, ne facciamo 11 tipi, miele col peperoncino piccante, miele con cipolla, miele con aglio, tutti e tre ottimi sui formaggi, poi miele con la nocciola che è una crema spalmabile e miele con la liquirizia. Poi produciamo anche il polline dei fiori che è un ottimo ricostituente. E ogni tanto facciamo qualche specialità tipo miele propolis nel periodo invernale, miele propolis e rosa canina sempre nel periodo invernale.
Allora vorrei chiederle perché il miele è un prodotto sano e questo che vende lei è buono per la salute dei consumatori.
Sì, il miele è un prodotto sanissimo, nella prima colazione non ci dovrebbe essere nulla di meglio del miele, questo almeno secondo le antiche abitudini. Il miele contiene più di 200 sostanze, contiene sia zuccheri semplici che vengono subito digeriti dall'organismo, sali minerali, oligoelementi, contiene anche vitamine, contiene enzimi e tantissime sostanze che prese in piccole quantità bisognerebbe consumare non più di 30-40 grammi al giorno di miele, prese in piccole quantità fanno bene all'organismo.
This was Pierino Calabria, a honeymaker from Assisi. He says, "Our company is over 30 years old. We produce organic honey from different flowers, acacia, chestnut, lime tree and so on. We also have many specialties, honey with 11 kinds of essential oils, honey and chili pepper, with onion, with garlic, great with cheese. We have honey and hazelnut spread, with licorice, and so on. We also produce pollen, which is a great re-energizer. Honey and propolis, great in the winter period." Then I ask, "Is honey an healthy product?" And he says, "It is. Honey is the perfect food for breakfast. It has always been used in ancient times. Honey contains more than 200 substances, simple sugars, easy to digest, minerals, enzymes. We should consume honey in little quantities, but 30-40 grams per day, 2 spoons, are great for our health."
People come to the city center every Wednesday morning to reconnect with their pastoral inner selves, something we all have and yearn for from within. Returning customers, as well as daily tourists, line up to get a taste of the town and region of Umbria. Hear for yourself from a local who frequents the Mercato del Sapremuro on why it is just so great.
Posso chiederle se viene qui spesso?
Sì, tutte le settimane in cui il mercatino è aperto, perché trovo che il mercato sia un momento di incontro molto più vivo dei negozi di grande distribuzione, e poi ci trovo dei prodotti che mi sembrano un po' più originali rispetto a quelli della grande distribuzione.
I come to this market each Wednesday. I come here because I feel like the market is a place much more alive in terms of exchange with other people than normal supermarkets. And also I find some products which are much more original than the one that I can find in a normal supermarket.
Markets like these fuel cities and provide a new, alive feeling with the people who frequent the market. Come on down and see for yourself what Mercado del Saparamuro is like. Be sure to taste everything, and don't forget your wallet, or else you'll be wishing that you brought it. Buon appetito!
Restaurant review of Al Mangiare Bene in Perugia, Italy. Al Mangiare Bene is located right off Corso Venuti on Via della Luna. The restaurant has a very friendly atmosphere and is definitely a place to go for fresh, organic, and locally sourced ingredients. When purchasing raw materials, Al Mangiare Bene prefers to have direct relationships with the local farmers, which are preferably organic. At the end of the restaurant review, we will talk with Al Mangiare Bene chef about his philosophy on eating local and organic and their practices in the restaurant.
We're here today with Meredith, who went with me to the restaurant. So what did you think of the restaurant, Meredith?
Hey, everybody. I really loved Al Mangiare Bene. It was a great atmosphere, even for a late-night dinner. The restaurant was still full and boisterous at 9:30, so I knew that it was definitely the place to go to eat. And I was starving at this point, so I was so happy to be there. We sat down, and the menu was great, with a wide variety of Italian classics and even some dishes that I had never heard of before, like pasta with walnut pesto.
So what did you have?
I went with the classic tagliatelle pasta with pomodoro sauce, and it would definitely hit the spot. According to their menu, it was made with flour from Molino Silvestri in Perugia and organic eggs from Liberovo in Narni. I loved the like fresh ingredients and everything. It did taste very fresh, like it had all been made that day, and the pasta was definitely doughier than your typical box pasta. And the simplicity of the pomodoro sauce was fantastic. And now, you were sitting next to me at the restaurant, and your food looked so good. Tell me about it.
So I had the sformato di verdure. It was a dish I had never tried, but it was very good. It had potatoes from Le Mele del Trasimeno and Emigliosi in Bastia Umbra, as well the egg from Liberovo. And also had la scamorza, which was a typical Italian cheese that came from an organic farm called Nuovo Moreto. And also the sunflower oil from Torre Colombia, which is right outside Perugia. It had a very fresh taste, and it was a light meal. And it was creamy and very much like quiche, but without a crust.
Oh my gosh, that sounds so good. How about your dessert? Because that definitely looked great.
That was definitely the best part of the meal. It was the dessert of the day, which was a cake. It tasted like banana bread with fresh pear at the bottom, and it was drizzled with chocolate syrup and powdered sugar.
Oh my gosh, that sounds fantastic. I wish I could have had some. Well, that's all for our trip to Mangiare Bene, and we hope that you guys go and experience it like we did. Ciao!
Qual è la filosofia che c'è dietro questo ristorante?
Beh, la filosofia è quella di cercare di aiutare i piccoli produttori, piccoli e piccolissimi produttori, rispetto alla grande industria che ha sicuramente ammazzato sia i piccoli agricoltori e sia anche l'economia, sotto certi punti di vista, delle varie aree e piccole zone. Soprattutto anche perché i piccoli produttori tengono il terreno in una certa maniera rispetto alle grandi industrie e perché comunque fanno dei prodotti veri e genuini.
Che risposta c'è stata da parte delle persone? Pensi che vengano qui per questi motivi o anche solo per il cibo, perché gli piace?
Allora, noi abbiamo cercato, per esempio, inizialmente non abbiamo mai scritto per esempio ristorante biologico su in cima, proprio per poter attirare più persone possibile e fare in modo che entrassero qua e leggessero il menù e assaggiassero le cose, perché se no con scritto già biologico sembra che tu fai una cosa d'elite che costa tanto, quindi l'idea è stata quella. Il riscontro c'è stato, logicamente se la cucina non era buona non ci sarebbe stato, è logico, però molte persone sono sensibili a questo discorso.
We've asked Davide, the chef and the owner of Mangiare Bene, what's the philosophy behind this restaurant? And he says, we try to help small producers. We think that big industries have killed small farmers and are part of our economy. Instead, we think that small-scale producers are the custodians of our landscape and their products are genuine and healthy. That's why we support them. And then we ask, do people come here mostly because they agree with this philosophy or mostly because of the food that you prepare? And he says, we never wrote organic restaurant on the banner on the street. We want people to enter, look at the menu, and try our food. Sometimes the word organic conveys an impression that is only for an elite, that is an expensive food, and we didn't want that. People keep on coming back to the restaurant, and that's because our food is good. At the same time, many people are conscious of our food choice, and they like this aspect as well.
South too much, I'm gonna tell you a little bit about this so that you understand what I'm talking about.
down there we have a plant that grows out in the woods and the fields. Looks something like a turnip green. Nearby calls it poke salad. Poke salad. Used to know a girl lived down there and she'd go out in the evenings and pick her a mess of it. Carry it home and cook it for supper. Cause that's about all they had to eat. They did all right. Down in Louisiana, where the alligators grow so mean, there lived a girl that I swear to the world made the alligators look tame. Poke salad, Annie. Poke salad, Annie. Everybody said it was a shame. She'd go down by the truck patch and pick her mess of poke salad and carry it home in a tote sack. Poke salad, Annie. The gator's got your granny. Chomp, chomp, chomp. Everybody said it was a shame, cause her mama was a wicked on ting ding. A wretched, spiteful, straight razor tote moment. Lord, I mustn't take my mess up.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this week, we decided to take on the traditional torta di Pasqua, a type of savory cheese bread. This bread has a long history and important cultural significance, as it is specific to the Umbria region in Italy and is traditionally eaten exclusively at Easter for Sunday brunch. This bread is rich in flavor and nutritional value and has deep symbolic connotations linked to the Umbrian communities, families, and bakers who have been making it for at least two centuries. Though there are many varieties, recipes have been passed down from mother to daughter, with women taking charge of making the torta di Pasqua, though men stepped in to help knead the dough, which became very heavy, and bakers offered up their ovens for the women to use. Traditionally, it is eaten during Easter as a symbol of renewal and rebirth, characterized by the abundance of food and ingredients and the richness of the territory. However, its popularity has now made it available in many bakeries throughout the years.
Since the year 2000, there has been an annual festival in Perugia in honor of this dish, aptly called the Festival of Torta di Pasqua Umbria, this year falling on March 26th until the 29th. At this festival, bakers, families, members of the community submit their own torta di Pasqua to be exhibited, tasted, and served alongside a meal of traditional Umbrian dishes. This festival has become very important to the Umbrian community as it reinforces their cultural bonds and symbolizes the renewal of tradition, which distinguishes them from surrounding regions and is rightfully a point of great pride. Okay, so now we're going to tell you a little about how we made this bread so that you can all try it at home.
So, there are many different types of torta di Pasqua, and though we didn't get a recipe passed down from our mothers, we were able to find one online, and you should too. We found ours on the portal of the Umbria region, tipicamenteumbria.it. Though quantities and the specific ingredients may be different for you, the process should still be the same.
We started by heating up the milk with a little water and melting the yeast into it.
We then measured out all the ingredients and mixed all the liquids together. This included the beaten eggs, olive oil, and warm yeast milk mixture.
To this mixture, we added the flour, salt, pepper, and three types of cheese, Parmigiano, Emmental, and Pecorino.
Then we let the dough rise in a warm place for 6 hours.
At this point, it was nearly spilling over the edge, and we transferred it into the baking tin. Traditionally, there is a very specific bowl that is only used for the torta di Pasqua to give it its unique shape. However, we substituted this for a standard square tin.
Baking time will vary depending on your oven, but we had it at 160 degrees Celsius for 20 minutes and then lowered it to 135 degrees Celsius for another 25. Let the bread cool, then serve with the traditional boiled eggs, cold cups, and blessed wine for a delicious Easter brunch.
Though nowadays people only make 2 to 3 torte for their families, in the past it was tradition to make enough so that they could be distributed and shared with the entire village, to your neighbors, and to people you owed favors to. As the making of the torte was a woman's role, it became a way for the woman to show her value if she was able to produce a beautiful torta. Good luck and enjoy!
With the flavor, all the flavor that you savor. Saving me for last, but you better not eat me at all. Living in a fast food bag, making friends with the ketchup and salt. Oh, people say that I'm crazy for not moving on to better things instead of sitting around trash talking with your onion ring. But it's much too soon to leave this easy life. Pass me the spoon, pass the analytical knife. You're about to get cut up or get cut down. It's all about the wordplay, all about the sound of my tone. The voice, you gotta let me make my choice alone. Before my food gets cold and shut up or get shot down. It's all about the know-how or just a matter of taste. Stop telling me the way I gotta play now. Too much food on my plate. My sights are no surprise in a cereal box. My stomach's smaller than my eyes. So I went to see the doctor and he said, turn my head and then cough. I didn't listen to what he said. Instead, I couldn't wait to get off. He said, I can have this, but I can't have that. I should keep wishing I was living the life of a cat. But I ain't the one who's gonna be missing the feast. Just like you ain't the one who seems to be calming the beast. Now you're about to get cut up or get cut down. It's all about the wordplay, all about the sound of my tone. And my voice, you gotta let me make my choice alone. Before my food gets cold, better shut up or get shot down. It's all about the know-how or just a matter of taste. Stop telling me the way that I gotta play. You're putting too much food on my plate, come on.
Welcome to the second episode of Spice Up Your English. I'm Kat. And I'm Marco.
And today's episode is about bread and the related idiomatic expressions in English. So bread actually has a pretty controversial and interesting etymology. So first, we're going to hear a little bit about that from Marco.
Yeah. So some scholars argue that the modern English word for bread has a strong relationship with the word brew. In fact, they say that they both come from an Indo-European root, which is brewa. This Indo-European root also gave us words in other languages, such as, for example, burni in Sanskrit, which means violent and passionate. From the same root, we have fervere in Latin, which means to boil or refers also to foam, and the old Irish word bruth, which means heat. So what is interesting is that across all these words, we can find a common pattern in meaning, which is that of fermentation, a sort of maelstrom of creation that eventually leads to, of course, food in one way, and, you know, fermentation and yeast, but also sort of passion and heat and vigor.
Okay, so now we're going to look at a quick literal definition of bread. So bread is defined as a kind of food made of flour or meal that has been mixed with milk or water, made into a dough or batter, with or without yeast or other leavening agent, and baked. So as you can tell, this is a pretty broad definition and can define so many different types of foods. So in English, we have a few other words to kind of further our definition. For example, we have pita or pizza, which are borrowed from Greek and Italian respectively. We also have loaf and bun, which we're going to focus on today, talk a little bit more about.
A little bit. So what's interesting about the word loaf is that it derives from an Anglo-Saxon word, chlaf, and that word was the most commonly used up until the 13th century to refer to bread. It currently defines just the shape of bread. It is used in idioms such as use your loaf, which means use your brain.
Like we're doing right now?
Yeah, of course.
Interestingly enough, in American English, we also have the phrase loafing around, which means to do nothing.
Oh, well.
We're not loafing around right now. We're using our loaves.
That's very interesting. The other word that Kat was talking about and we can focus a bit more on is bun. Bun also defines the shape of a round bread, and it is found in phrases such as hot buns, and this phrase is attested from the 1960s, and it refers to male butt cheeks. It's currently used both for male and female. And again, it obviously with the same meaning. You can understand yourself why it was firstly employed to describe that part of human body, and that's because of the perceived similarity between the shape of the two. But actually, all the polysemy of the word bun has to do with its shape. In fact, we can think about, for example, hair buns, or the Scottish word bun, which refers to a rabbit tail. From here, you get also the word bunny, of course. So all this sort of round shape that the word bun describes, it's interestingly enough also found in the sound. So there's a recent speculation on the relationship between sound and the meaning of the word. And if you think a little bit more about it, you have bun, which defines a round shape. But when you're actually uttering the word bun, you put your mouth in a sort of round shape, and also the sound that comes out is, you could describe it as round.
This further relates to the idiomatic expression bun in the oven, which means to be pregnant. So you can imagine the round shape of a woman's body when she's pregnant. Again, it has that circular shape. It's interesting because you can draw a parallel between the gestational period during pregnancy and the fermentation of bread in an oven. Yeah. So it's almost like, not to say that, you know, this mother is cooking a baby, but there's definitely a parallel between, you know, this gestational process, fermentation, and the creation of life and life-giving bread at the end.
Yeah. In fact, that relates really well with our second meaning. The second meaning you can find in the dictionary for bread is actually livelihood. So the bread is so central in our cultures and so important to life in general that its meaning has expanded over time to include livelihood. And Kat will show us some expressions that actually reflect and mirrors this sort of meaning.
So one of the main ones, and probably the most descriptive one, is bread is the staff of life. It's a proverb meaning that people can't survive bread. So bread in the English language has kind of taken on this place as the archetypal food. Bread and water is a phrase used to define the essentials of life. Now in the Bible, there are many examples of where bread is used to describe sustenance, not only physical sustenance, but spiritual sustenance. And this kind of crystallizes in the Catholic Mass when practitioners take the Eucharist. And so they're eating bread physically, but also spiritually.
Yeah, and that's called also sacramental bread.
We have also the phrase to break bread with someone, which means to share a meal, but there's also the more nuanced definition, to share a meal with someone with the intention of creating a friendship or overcoming a past strife that you might have had with them. So finally, we have man does not live on bread alone. And again, this calls back to spiritual sustenance as well as physical.
And all of these sayings are actually derived from the Bible, where, as Kat was saying, bread plays a crucial role, especially with the figure of Jesus Christ in the Gospel. The third meaning that we found on the dictionary.com is the one referring to money. In fact, in the Cockney rhyming slang, we have the expression bread and honey, which literally, I would say figuratively, means money.
So from this definition, we have the English word breadwinner. For example, if you have a couple and only one of them has a job, then that person is the breadwinner. We additionally have the phrases bread is the staff of life and bread and water. In both these instances, bread is used as shorthand for these essentials of life, almost like an archetypal food. But interestingly enough, there's also the phrase, man cannot live on bread alone, which seems to imply humans also need spiritual nourishment to live a complete life. This bread-spiritual life connection is especially evident in the Bible, and in particular, the Gospel, which explains the life and deeds of Jesus Christ. The most famous Catholic prayer, Our Father, includes the phrase, give us this day our daily bread. So in a Catholic Mass, this daily bread is physical with the taking of communion, but also spiritual with respect to the opening of the mind and the soul to God.
So since man does not live on podcasts alone, please help us get our daily bread by sharing this podcast on Facebook and with your friends. And this was Marco.
And Kat, broadcasting live from the Umbria Institute in Perugia, Italy.
Bye!
Bye!
Our food adventures for today are over. Thank you for being with us. And thanks to the authors of today's podcast, Grace Kiley, Michael Madigan, Anel Gonzalez Ruiz, Meredith Jean, Sophie Stewart, Lindsay Bogash, Marco Bagli, Catherine Tartaglia. A special thanks goes to Antonella Valoroso for her wits and help, Francesco Burzacca, curator of the program, and Jason Johnson for suggesting many great food songs. The conversation continues on our Facebook page, The Umbria Institute, to keep feeding your body and soul. Until the next episode, a savory goodbye by Elisa Scione. Ciao!
radiofonica.it.